Hello, lovely listener of the Imaginary Life podcast. Today, we are back with a special episode. I took a few weeks off from work and I went to Germany to see Ali. Ali left Lesbos in December 2021 after living there for 2.5 years, and I thought it would be interesting to get the perspective of someone who had managed to get out of that place and was now starting a new chapter in his life in a new and hopefully last country. I wanted to know how Ali perceived the last 3 years of his life and if he could compare his experiences in Greece and Germany. The interview went very well. Everything was going wonderfully well when a big, big, huge technical error happened. The editing program crashed and I lost the whole interview with Ali except for 10 minutes that miraculously survived. I don't know why, but it's still 10 minutes that are usable describing the conditions in Moria camp. And I warn you, it's not joyful. Normally, Ali is like that.
How are you, my splendid, glorious, fantastic, becoming sister?
I think you will just break the microphone, Ali, at some point.
But in this clip, you will find him much more serious and concerned. Shame and anger, that's what I feel when I listen to this extract of Ali's testimony. As Europeans, we cannot accept that such conditions, violating a good number of fundamental rights, take place on our soil, in our name for our so-called protection. So, after listening this podcast, think about what we can do to make sure this doesn't happen.
Aprite le frontiere!
Sınırlar açın!
Marza boskunin!
Abrit las fronteras!
Ouvre les frontières!
Abrons les frontières!
Ta'ala hadou! Ma,
di glensu nou!
Buka probatasa!
Anniksta sinora!
Avat karayan!
Abrons les frontières!
Abrons les frontières!
Iftahu le
frontières!
Open the borders!
Ouvre
les frontières!
Talking about the BRF, how I went to BRF to work with them, in order to work with them as an interpreter, as a Farsi Dari interpreter. I remember one night I was with my friends in the, it was almost evening. I was with my, sitting in one of my friends' room, like my friend's tent, with my friends sitting and talking to each other. And suddenly, some people started fighting with each other close to us. And one of them got stabbed by knife. And nobody could send him to the clinic because everybody was afraid if somebody takes him to the clinic, maybe he would also be in the trouble. So I saw him bleeding so much. I took him in my hug, and I went so fast to the clinic, and I brought him to the clinic and I told to them that yeah, he was stabbed by knife because of fight with some more people, and they called ambulance fast and they sent him to the hospital and he survived. Then the Dutch volunteers told me that thank you so much. They appreciated and they said that thank you that you brought him here so fast. Otherwise, maybe he would be in a bad situation or maybe dying. And I remember the coordinator of BRF at the time was, I forgot her name. Her name was like,
yeah, anyway. Coordinator of BRF.
Yeah, coordinator of BRF. It was in my mind, but now I forgot it. And she came to me and said this, thank you, would you like to work with us as an Farsi Dari interpreter? And I said, yes, for sure, I would like to work with you. And she registered me, and I started working with them from the next night. And her name was also Karin. Yeah, Karin.
Was it so often that people got stamped or that they were fight in the camp?
In general, when I was in Moria, because at the time there were a lot of people coming, almost more than 25,000 refugees at the time, that there were people, and still people were coming. So there were a lot of fights. And of course, because when you came there, because of too many people were there, and the procedure of receiving money was late. Imagine, for example, when you would arrive there, you would get your money after 4 or 5 months after your arrival, which is a bit weird. That's why some young people, they had to fight or they had to steal money from others, you know. Like, it was like a jungle rules, like animals. Some people were sad and some people no, and some people, because they didn't have money, they had to fight or they had to steal somebody else. But if they would get money, if they would be in better, good situation, of course, no one would steal money from somebody else. Yeah.
And how did your family react to the fact that you were stuck in this kind of place?
They were sad, but they could do nothing. They could do nothing, and I didn't talk about my situation bad because I didn't want to make them sad. I always said to them that, yeah, my situation is good. I'm happy. My hands, my body, my legs are healthy. I can take a breath. I can go walking. I can eat food. Can do anything until my asylum, so it was good. It was so difficult the first days. Being in Moria was like a big, huge disaster, or I can say bad prison. Imagine that when you have to wake up in the morning to stay at the line to get your breakfast. And what is breakfast? Imagine what it would be. It was only one cake, 50-cent cake, and one big bottle of water. Just this. So to me, as a young person who was training and needing a lot of food, I had to go to be the first person at the line to get my food, to get my cake and bottle of water, and to put it in the room in my tent, and come back again so fast to stay at the line to get the second food if I could. And I have to get food twice or three times in order to get full, and always was the same. The lunch was not good. The food wasn't cooked so well. A lot of problems. The bathroom was so dirty. There was no hygiene. And a few toilets. And always the toilets were always blocked or crowded. So you need to wait at the toilet for so long. At least 30 minutes. Imagine, at least 30 minutes. The bathroom was the shower place. The water was not hot always. It was hot only in the morning, from, for example, from 7 o'clock until 11. So thousands of people had to take a shower only in the morning in order to use the hot water. And like you had to stay for 1-2 hours, at least more than 2 hours. Like hundreds of people at the line for going to the shower. And in the night, because the water was cold and nobody could take shower. There was trouble washing your clothes. There was no washing machine. You had to wash all your clothes or your dirt clothes by your hands. So in the morning, because the water was good, everyone, you could see lots of women, boys, kids, everyone was busy washing their clothes. And like myself, me with my cousin Hadi, we both washed the clothes like once a week together on the weekend, because the other days I was working, I was busy as a volunteer helping the people as a translator, interpreter. So I was free only on the weekend. So each weekend I had to wash the clothes with my cousin. The lunch was not well cooked. And one time rice, one time like pasta, one time. There was no protein, no good food inside. And not delicious at all. And at night, the dinner was only one bread with two eggs, which is a bit like crazy to think about it, but it was like it was what it was.
Monaco, 28 degrés à l'ombre. C'est fou. C'est trop. On est tout seul au monde. Tout est bleu. Tout est beau. Tu fermes un peu les yeux. Le soleil est si haut. Je caresse tes jambes. Et mes mains brûlent ta peau. Fruits sauvages. Et voilà. comme une vague blonde, tu m'emportes déjà.
Je suis bien.